morning.
Right.
Yeah, you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Gorgeous morning, isn't it? It's freezing,
yeah.
Though.
I know, I'm surprised, yeah, in the wind, and then the sun goes.
I stepped outside and then I went back in and got more layers.
Yeah, I think I brought enough.
Yeah, I think when we get up the top, it'll be nice. We'll get a nice sheltered spot.
Yeah.
It's so lovely. It was fog. Have you seen it coming over Kimberley?
Yeah, the low cloud was rolling in as I came through. Some gorgeous light all across.
You chose the right day for it. Yeah. I woke up and looked out the window and I was like, yes!
Finally got the weather, sorted.
There's some atmospheric clouds.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah. You alright this morning?
Yeah, I'm good, yeah. I'm surprised, I'm not surprised really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, by like 8, 9 o'clock, it'll be absolutely packed. What do you see, Matt? I'm interested in what you see, if it's different.
Right now?
Yeah. If it's different to how I would describe
that's an interesting question, because I think we all see things differently, don't we? We assume that people see the same thing, but then in reality we don't, do we? We interpret things very differently, I guess. So I think, yeah, just for me at the moment, it's just all looking at the light and shade of the landscape. After all the sort of blue skies we've had recently, it's nice to have the clouds, because that really does sculpt the land lovely. You've got all these pockets of shadow and light and shade, and yeah, just looking at the way that the light is making shapes and patterns across the hills is pretty beautiful. So yeah, how would you?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, because I'm more thinking about what I'm looking at in terms of, even though while we were walking up I was noticing the light, and this morning from home I was noticing the fog, the band of fog that was going over Kinder.
Stunning.
But if ask me to describe it, I would think more about how you can see the top of Winnett's Pass and the areas that are maybe lit up, and then the ridge, and then the greenery of the heather, which is just so green right now,
it's really vibrant at the moment.
Yeah,
it's caught me out a little bit. I think it's quite early.
when
we were walking up, that's the thing I noticed in the hillside just up below Ringing Roger there, how green it was.
It sort of seems like illuminated, doesn't it?
It is, yeah. It's got a very illuminant feel to it.
Yeah, and we're sat below the Ringing Roger outcrops. Why do you like this area of Kinder Scout?
I think I've got good memories of sort of heading up this way. Is in early days of photography. I think it was one of the first areas that I did look at when I started to take pictures, I guess, of Kinder Scout. So, I mean, it's a steady walk as well, which helps.
Some people disagree with that.
Yeah, it's not out of all the ways up, I think I do find it the most easiest once you've broke that little incline and it starts to flatten out, and then the approach is quite magnificent as well. As soon as you get sort of just crest the hill and Ringing Roger appears, I think that's such a wonderful view, and then there's the anticipation, you know, of what that might bring, because usually I would be heading up in the dark, so there's always that excitement and that anticipation, and often disappointment when the weather doesn't quite play ball.
Yeah.
In terms of photography, I suppose, but it's never disappointing just to be, you know, to be out in this area. So yeah, I think it's the magnificence of that edge, and there's quite some interesting rock formations as well, sort of been created by the elements, by the wind and the rain. Can just sort of see them now in the distance, how they've all been sort of grooved out. So they make interesting subjects as well. I think all over Kinder you've got these little outcrops of interest, almost as if it's been placed there for us to photograph, selfishly. I think sort of Ringing Roger really is a real favourite place for me, I think, for those reasons.
And it seems really perfect that we've come up here today, because this is where we first met as well. Because obviously
yes,
I was following your photography on Instagram, and X
yeah.
before, and now Blue Sky. And I always really appreciated your photography. And then one day when I was out walking, we just bumped in, we sort of crossed paths, didn't yes. we? And you were coming off the hill.
Yes.
And I was thinking, oh, it's quite early. And you were coming down. And yeah, I met Ralph, your dog, who barked at me.
Yes, sorry about that. A bit better today.
Yeah, he's been very friendly. So do you always take Ralph with you?
Yes, I think, I don't think there's actually been a time where he hasn't been with me. So and you get used to that companionship, and he's been well trained since he's been with me. He's quite a placid dog anyway, so we'll get to a point where we might fancy a stop and a look round and look for compositions and things. And he, once I get the tripod out and click them into place, he knows that sound, and he gets down and he'll rest and sleep while we. He admits defeat, I suppose. He knows that we're going to be around for a while, so he gets down and just goes to sleep. So,
yeah, it's yeah. what he's doing now, I think.
Yeah, he's quite happy now.
Actually. He tried to sort of make a bit of a point and chewed on some heather.
Yes, he had to show his rebellious side while we stopped just to make a point. But yeah, he's quite happy now.
So you were saying on the way up that he's about 12 years old. How did you come into each other's lives?
He's a rescue dog, so just we'd been looking for a dog, and we just went to the shelter, and he was sat there with a big basset hound in this big sort of almost like a circus ring where they kept all the dogs, and he was just flat out in there. And from the moment we saw him, we thought, you know, he looks like the one. So yeah, I've had him 12 years ago from a shelter, and he's been with me ever since.
He's had many adventures.
We have, yes, he has. He's got me out of a few scrapes a few times.
Oh, has he?
Yeah, we were up in the Lake District, actually, on Red Pike. And down below, it was actually really sunny, but there was still some snow on the peaks as we got to the top. And we were fine getting up, but on the way back, I'd sort of missed the path a little bit, and I was walking towards sort of a snowy edge that wasn't quite stable, and he pulled me away and took me the correct way.
Oh wow.
So he knows once he's been one place he'll find the way back, so yeah, not too extreme, but yeah, he helped me out there a bit.
Yeah, and he seems like a really good walking companion because he is so calm. I mean, obviously he's a bit older now.
Yeah.
Has he always been this calm when you stop and?
Yes, pretty much. Yeah, he's got into that routine. He has his moments, don't get me wrong. But yeah, he's a calm dog, which does really help. Yeah, definitely.
And so if you were to bring your camera out today, what would you be picking out?
Oh, no pressure. Well, so the first thing sort of I noticed as we were just talking about a moment ago with the light and shade, it's quite sort of nice, interesting abstracts between the hills and the valley beyond. So I'd look for sort of an intimate shot there, sort of a nice close-up detail, and just look at the different contrasting shapes and diagonals. I think that's a really interesting scene to focus on. I think if I was further afield, I'd perhaps be looking more of using the rocks and things like that. But from this perspective, yeah, the landscape beyond looks stunning with the fields, because the light is still reasonably low, so we're still getting that lovely texture across the landscape.
I thought it was brilliant that you suggested that we meet at 7:15 in Edel. Not many people say that.
Yes, I did think about earlier, but then, yeah, I'd be too tired for my brain to work. So yeah, it's a balance to not to be too early. But yeah, I was surprised how busy it was actually, which is a good, like you mentioned, it is a good thing. Yeah, to people getting out and enjoying the landscape. But I think even as busy as it was there, I mean, we're alone now. That's the beauty of this landscape, is there's plenty of room for everyone to enjoy it. So you can still get that nice feeling of isolation without being overcrowded or anything like that. And if people can connect to their environment and to nature, then it, in small ways, it helps keep things preserved and precious. I think if people don't connect with it, they don't understand so much about how much we need to look after these places. I think that's massively important, and it's good to see people out and enjoying it and making that connection.
So how do you connect with a landscape? Let's talk about maybe the gritstone edges. How do you connect with a place like this? Is it sitting with your dog, or is it through the camera lens, or is it while you're walking, or are they different?
It's many things, really. I mean, there's a connection from being a young person without a camera, initially, I suppose, just for me to enjoy the Peak District, which I don't know whether perhaps talk later about that, but in terms of photography, it's just a sense of being present in the landscape and just walking and observing, really, and then getting to know places over repeat visits, understanding where the light may fall at different times of year. So, and that's taken a while for me to work out through mistakes, really, from going somewhere and realizing that the sun is in the wrong place and everything's perhaps in shadow. So I know that in certain times of year, certain areas are better to go to. And then, I don't really go out with any plans anymore. I'll just sort of just walk, observe, and see what happens. And that definitely helps if you remove that pressure. Because I used to put pressure on myself to always come back with a picture or a photograph.
You mean one that is the one that you're going to post, or the one you're going to sell?
Or to come back with some sort of achievement of that morning, really. And then that can always lead to sort of disappointment. Because if you didn't work out the way you perhaps thought, if you have too many preconceived ideas, it doesn't always lend itself to seeing as well as you could, perhaps, just being open and being observant. So I found more and more these days is just to head out without any pressure, any plans, and just see and observe. And that comes with the luxury of being able to go out more often as well, I suppose. Because when you haven't got time, time's limited, then there is that extra pressure. And it's just over a period of time, relaxing that idea and becoming a little bit more open and worry less about posting on social media and things like that, and realise that that doesn't overly matter in the scheme of things, and it's about being enjoying the experience as much as taking the picture.
I really like how a lot of your landscape shots, and when I say landscape, I mean sort of wide open, gritstone landscape shots. They seem to be quite moody.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that's just because of the time that you go out, that it just coincides with that type of weather, or whether that you like that sort of scene.
I certainly like, I do like to be out in bad weather. I mean, a day like this, for example, I mean, this is actually quite a lot of mood around today. When you've got a blue sky day, it's difficult for photography because it's so harsh, unless you can find sort of areas of shade. But I always find it gives me a buzz as well to see dramatic light.
Thinking this morning, I was wondering if you were getting excited as you were driving through the Hope Valley.
Oh, it's gorgeous, yeah. to see all the low cloud rolling in off the hills. Yeah, it was stunning. I think I should have packed my camera.
Yeah, do you feel a bit frustrated that you haven't got it?
No, it's. I do enjoy photographing bad weather. You sometimes have to take a bit of a soaking for that, but it's always worth it. I think the best of the light is always in between weather systems. So once one passes through, there's often dramatic light on the other side of that. It's exhilarating and exciting to put yourself on it. No, it's not. We're not extreme as such, but to be out in that weather is wonderful to experience nature in all its glory.
And do you find it challenging with shooting the edges here in terms of the shapes? And do you find it hard to capture, let's say, the essence of Kinder Scout, for example? Do you find it hard to portray that in your photography?
Yeah, definitely. It's taken a long time, and still is a process of learning where things work and trying and experimenting. It's difficult. I don't like to call things failures, because I think you always learn something from something that didn't quite work the way you intended it to. So, and it's just trial and error, and looking for different things, taking a picture perhaps, and then analysing that afterwards. Kinder Scout is particularly difficult for me. Although I've been up many times, I don't actually have that many photographs that I'm completely happy with. I particularly love the wool packs. I mean, that's to me, that's like nature's own sculpture garden. It's, you wander through there and you feel like you're observing somebody's work, you know, and it's it's nature's work, isn't it? You're wandering through a sculpture park. But I find that incredibly difficult to photograph. It's so busy to one degree. So it's something that I intend to keep coming back to and hopefully work it out one day. And like all of us, you know, we lead busy lives, so time's always, it's challenging to keep coming back. So hopefully one day, yeah, I'll have more time to sort of explore this area.
And with the wall packs, would you suggest trying to photograph one of the rock formations sort of in detail and in close up, or would you say it's better to get a sort of overview of it, or so to photograph a few of the rocks and in a cluster as such?
I think primarily is looking for more is tighter details. I've tried to photograph it as an expanse, and it's just working out that best viewpoint to show that, because you just can't portray it correctly.
And it's difficult with all the shadows, because if it's sunny weather, then yeah, they. I mean, I suppose you know how to work with shadows, but yeah, I find it really tricky trying to, because when I'm walking or running through there, it just feels magnificent, and there's these feelings of curiosity and exploration, and I feel like I could spend hours there just. Yeah. In the maze of rocks.
Yes.
Whereas putting that across in a photo, I just feel like it's really difficult to.
That is the challenge. Yeah, definitely. It is. I mean, you summed it up beautifully there. It is magnificent, and it is so difficult to put that in one picture. So, for me, it is looking more at isolated elements of the place. I mean, I would love to do more of an open project on there, which shows the open vista of it, and then really focusing in on the details of the separate sculptures. But yeah, it's one of those wonderful places to spend. You could spend a lifetime
yeah.
in that one area, exactly. Yeah, and probably still wouldn't make the most of it. So, but that, you know, that is the beauty of Kinder, really.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like with time, with spending more and more time up here, do you feel like you are getting to a place where you feel happier with your photography up here, or do you feel like it's still this thing that you
I think I've got a long way to go. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I've not mastered it at all. I've tried small sort of projects from one journey up here, just sort of focusing on my journey as while I walk around Kinder, just following. It was a morning. I probably had four seasons in one day. Back in winter a few years ago, so there was sun, hail, rain, snow in a space of a few hours. And it was just interesting, because there'd been a lot of rain, to see the flow of water from the top to the bottom. And I just documented that little sort of journey.
That's the one you wrote about on Substack, wasn't it?
Yes.
I think that's such a nice read. And I've never even thought about photographing that, those close-ups of the water or anything. So it was amazing to see that.
And it wasn't really planned as such. It was just something that as I was walking up and observing, it sort of fell into place. And while I made my way back down Jacob's Ladder in that area, just following the river to the bottom.
So, I mean, we're chatting away about gritstone rocks and big, vast moorland landscapes, but actually the work that I see you share most, especially on Instagram, is your tree photography. One of the things I've been burning to ask you...
Okay, oh dear.
..is when you've got a niche, like photographing trees, and you do it so spectacularly, and obviously you've got like a strong following, and you're selling your work, and this is something that people are excited about, and they comment on your work. And so I just wonder, when you've got something that is so special and so unique like that, what is it that draws you? If you, because I imagine that you love trees, that you,
yes.
you love being
sounds
around
bit,
them.
Yeah, sounds a little strange when you put it like that.
Well, okay,
yeah.
You enjoy.
Yeah,
you,
no, I
you
know
appreciate.
What you mean. Yes, yeah.
You appreciate trees and being around them and studying them, observing them. So, if you love being around that sort of environment, what is it then that draws you to Kinder Scow and other moorland vast landscapes?
Although they're very different environments, they carry a similar sensation. I mean, woodlands are a place of solitude, and Kinder Scow is a place of solitude as well. They're both places to escape to. I think as much as I love the lower areas of the Peak District, they can be quite busy. And in terms of when I am working, I do find it difficult if there are lots of people around to settle and to get into the flow of things. So yeah, they're both a place of solitude and respite. Walking among trees certainly gives that sensation. I mean, the magical places, and Kinder Scow carries that same feeling as well. So yeah, this, although they're very, very different environments, they both carry that same feeling for me. It's an isolation and a place to escape to.
Because I know some people comment on how sad it is that there aren't more trees in some of the areas of the Peak District, for example. But it doesn't sound like that's the case for you. It sounds like you just appreciate it in a different way.
Yes. I didn't realise that, because for me, there are so many woodlands around. You're spoilt for choice, really. You've got sort of ancient oak woodlands of Padley Gorge, and then the silver birch of Bowl Hill. And then in between that, you've got the Moor, Stanton Moor, which is another wonderful birch woodland. And then it's just finding out these unusual pockets of woodland that are all dotted around all over. And that's part of the fun, really, is the exploration of finding something new.
Yeah, I think sometimes people think that it's very sort of desolate here, and desolate in terms of wildlife, but I think that can be the case if you just walk around the edges in the middle of the day. But I actually do experience wildlife up here that maybe some people just don't get the chance to see. And I think that's why some people think that it's sad that it doesn't have more woodlands up here or on some of the other...
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm the same. I've seen sort of the mountain hares up here, which are incredible animals. I think you need the diversity in the landscape, and Kinder is known for its bleak beauty. And the woodlands are beautiful in their right too.
So how did you find your... I use the word niche, maybe that's not a very nice word, maybe, but how did you find your niche with tree photography?
When you get to my age, sort of in my 50s now, it's you reflect back on life and stuff like that, and you start to make connections of why things were important to you. And when I was about 8 years old, my parents split up, and we moved to a different house, which actually, although at the time it was a massive upheaval, it was probably a blessing in disguise, because we actually moved to a nicer area. And although it was a bit of a struggle coming to terms with all the issues around a divorce and things like that, but being 8 years old, you don't really take it in as such. But we moved to a property that had a woodland on the back of the house. It was just a standard urban 80s estate, but on the back of our home, we had a woodland that we could just literally walk from the back gate into. Now, this place wasn't big at all. It was quite small in reality.
Feels bigger when you're little, though.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. We'd get home from school. We'd be straight in there till our mum called us for tea, or she'd send the dog in to find us, and we knew it was time to come back. So we spent hour after hour in this, what we thought was a huge woodland, but wasn't. So for me, I think that was the beginning of being comfortable among trees, because that for me was my escape. And although I probably didn't realise it at the time, that was what settled me down from all the conflict around, you know, home life. Although it wasn't like there was anything overly bad, it was just that situation. And this woodland had, I could have sketched it out like one of those maps you get at a theme park. So there was a whole area of rhododendrons that created this, like, almost an amphitheatre that as friends, we sat on these branches that tiered up, which we thought was great fun, and we had favourite trees that we would climb, and then other areas that were slightly more open that we'd sit and sit in and build a tree swing and things like that. So for me, that was sort of the first important meaning of a woodland for me. Obviously, that didn't make any connection until later on, and I think just being in more in an adult life and then going through other things, the ups and downs that we all go through in life, I think finding the woodland again for me was that connection again and that peace and calm. Yeah, everyone feels a similar connection when you're in a woodland, when you've got the sounds and the smells. I think we all, it does, human nature, well, I don't think we were sort of made to be wandering around built up urban environments, and perhaps sometimes we don't realise how important those quiet spaces are. And I think everyone who we speak to who perhaps hasn't been out in that open landscape ultimately thinks, wow, why haven't I done this sooner?
Yeah, exactly. You can just become so isolated in your day-to-day life. And I mean, even just going to the woods the other day, it just felt like going into a completely different world. Yet I could still hear the trains and and people using chainsaws, you know, and all sorts of sounds going around. But then in between all of that, there were these, I just thought how alive everything felt. And
yeah, perfect description, really. Yeah,
because it's like my senses all came to life.
Yes, yeah, it does. It's the silver birch woodland, and it's so tightly compact that you were walking amongst almost people. It feels that way.
Yeah, it does.
You do get that sense of certainly in that in Bole Hill area. So I've photographed in there quite a lot. I think you get that sense that, because it's got quite a rich history, industrial history in there. It used to be a quarry that excavated all the stone for the dams and the local housing. So there was a train line that ran all through that area. And it would have been quite a devastated area in terms of the impact that had on. So to walk through it today, after imagining how noisy and dirty it was and all the people that lived and worked in that land, to see it now so peaceful. And those trees often remind me of that mirror images of the people that once worked that land.
Oh, wow.
Because they do. I mean, I often walk through there, and although it does feel quite eerie, it always feels comforting at the same time. It's not threatening in any way, but it's got this real magical feeling because you are enclosed. And birch trees, they always populate a land the quickest, and they self-seed, so they spread quite a lot. So it's packed, jam-packed full of all these trees, and it can be quite overwhelming. A difficult place to photograph, but also one that you can really make magical pictures in as well if the light's right. And it's because it sits slightly lower down in the quarry, it has a very unique sound. So the sound is quite muffled, it's quiet, and you're often sheltered from the elements. So there's the smells, there's the sound, and there's the senses that you see that really overwhelm and that create that particular woodland something special.
I could hear the curlews.
Beautiful, yeah.
Now, you work professionally as a photographer, so what came first for you? Was it walking out with your camera and then you decided to become a photographer, or which way round did things go?
It started at school, photography. I don't know if when we were kids we'd do work experience. I don't know if did you do something similar?
Yeah, I didn't enjoy it very much.
No, we either went to our parents' place of work or somewhere.
I went to a school which didn't seem very much of a different environment.
This is all the same. And I think I tried various things. I wanted to be a mechanic, and then I went there for a week and thought that's not perhaps quite for me. And then I wanted to be a sound engineer, and again I just didn't think that was quite right. And I think I was getting towards the end of school, almost panicking, thinking, what can I do when I leave? And then in the last year, I changed subjects and took art and design. Now, I can't draw at all. I quickly realised I was useless with a pen or a paintbrush. But in the back of the classroom, there was a little cupboard, and this was a dark room. So I thought this was great. And there were about four of us ventured off into the photography, and we'd go around school and take really bad photographs, get them developed, and then go into this dark room and see these terrible pictures appear in the developer tray, and it was like, wow, this is something that I want to try and pursue as a career. So it started, that was probably about 14, 15, so all of a sudden I kind of got this light bulb moment of what something that I want to pursue as a career. So that led to studying in Sheffield for 2 years, and then just outside Leeds for the 2 years. Funnily enough, the college where I studied at Norton is now where I live.
Completely
coincidentally, because I'm not from that area at all. So it's almost like coming home, you know, full circle in that respect. Yeah, so photography started for me at quite an early age as a career. And then the Peak District is sort of intertwined sort of through that throughout my life, not necessarily in a photographic sense. So commercial photography started first for me, looking for work and earning a living that way. And then landscape photography did come a little bit secondary afterwards.
Is it difficult for you to spend so much time working on photography? Because obviously you're doing it as your profession and you're also doing it in your leisure time. And do you find that difficult? And do you find time for rest and to take the pressure off yourself?
I'm always trying to find that balance. Yeah, that as I'm getting a little bit older, I'm certainly working that out much better. It was certainly difficult to begin with, but both are very different. Although it's both photography, they're both very different sort of outlets for me. Commercial photography, which I do enjoy, is very pressurised, and you're always working to somebody else's brief. You do get your own decision making in certain things, but generally you are working to a brief and somebody else's idea. So landscape photography is just for me, really. So there's no pressure in terms of what I need to create. So that's the outlet to my commercial work. So it's like, yeah, the escapism from the pressurised work. So I don't find it any conflict in that way. But yeah, time is always an issue.
You do sell some of your personal photography, don't you?
Yes, yeah, and I'm sort of edging more towards the balancing the other way of making the landscape photography more of my, not a job as such, but more looking more towards earning money that way rather than the commercial sense. Yeah, it's an age thing, isn't it? I think when I was younger, we're full of energy, ambition, and nothing phases us as we sort of build our career. But this, when you come in sort of down the other side of the hill, if you like, your priorities change. So not that I've always been money motivated as such, but it's more, even less so these days. So it's all about quality of life, and switching the balance the other way to landscape photography is very much is the important side for me to move forward, I think, while I'm still young enough to climb the hills and things like that. So I'm trying to, I mean, the commercial world is a difficult place at the moment anyway. You're sort of battling between saturation of the market and technology advances in terms of 3D and AI. So the market is always shrinking in that respect. So I'm quite happy to sort of shift that balance over now into something a little bit different and try something different with my life and look to explore a different avenue, I think.
So you're selling books, aren't you?
I've just released a book, yes, yeah. trying to sell it, yeah. It's difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, and what's in the book?
That is all about Bold Hill Quarry. So just what we sort of talked about earlier.
I should get myself a copy.
Some laugh. So it's all about that, the characters of that particular woodland and the history of, and the place of it. And it's probably over a period, most of the work is over a period of about the last 5 years or so. So although I've explored it for quite a while, it's taken a long time to sort of understand it. So yeah, that's available.
Mm-hmm. And what's in the book? Is it purely photos, your photos, or
yes,
are there captions and information as well?
There are a little bit of history, but mainly it is, yeah, just pictures and photographs of that area. It does stretch sort of slightly wider around Hathersage and the other woodlands in that area, but primarily, yeah, it's all around that's one quarry.
And are you planning to do more of these types of books?
I would love to. It is a difficult thing, I think, to sell books, but I am building sort of different collections of work, not really with the intention of a book as such, but just to see where it leads and see where that takes me. I think it's good to have a project or different projects on the go, because it can give you focus sometimes to think about different bodies of work and experimenting in different ways.
And do you enjoy the simplicity of walking with, you know, even if you haven't got a camera, do you actually enjoy it rather than it just being a chore that you have to do to take the dog out or to get a photo? Do you actually enjoy being out?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's places where perhaps not been for a while where you think, oh, I've just got a craving just to go and walk that edge or come one of the paths up to Kinder. It's, yeah, just sort of kind of, as I mentioned earlier, that pressure, not having that pressure to take a picture, but just to go for a walk and see what happens while you're walking is much more enjoyable than saying, I must go to this place to capture a picture. So definitely the enjoyment is just purely being out and walking.
And do you enjoy walking just with Ralph, or do you like walking with others as well? And did you start out walking alone? Because I know for some people do it and they really enjoy it, and others obviously walk with friends or groups.
Yes, I think both really. I don't want to sound too much like a hermit. I do enjoy walking alone with Ralph. Certainly if I'm out with photography in mind, I do struggle with other people.
Yeah, because you sort of need the time, don't you?
Properly,
yeah, and it's not fair to ask the other person or people to wait while
exactly,
you...
It's hard sometimes when you walk in, particularly with my wife. She can get fed up if I stop for too long and we want to move on and she's shivering away.
Yeah. You'll be saying that to me in a minute. You're like, can we just wrap up this podcast, please?
I know. I mean, the drama's still here. It's really, the cloud's really coming in. But on the other side of that, yeah, I have groups of friends who we really enjoy just specifically, you know, going out for a walk as well and having chats. And I think it's a lot easier to talk while you're walking. It's people can be a lot more open, I think. So, yeah, we really enjoy getting together and heading out in the hills.
And do you have any areas that you'd really like to walk that you haven't yet, whether that's here, local to the Peak District, or in other locations?
Yeah, definitely. I think Scotland is a big place where I'd love to explore more. I've had a few breaks up there, but not enough to really get to grips with it. I mean, that's such a majestic landscape, isn't it? The Outer Hebrides as well is one on the list I'd love to go to. That's certainly become a lot more popular in the last few years. I mean, it sort of looks Mediterranean with the dramatic weather. And there's always places in the Peak District to explore as well. Yeah.
Yeah, there's so much here. I mean, because I rely on public transport mainly, unless I'm travelling with someone else, I tend to sort of stick to the Hope Valley, and even here, you know, even within the Hope Valley, yes, and the train connections here, there's so much. But even just going anywhere from home in Edam, you can get to so many places.
Yeah.
You can get onto the Limestone Way by dropping into Castleton, or you can, obviously there's all of this Dark Peak side, and I just think sometimes it's hard to get away to other places when there is so much that's right on your doorstep.
100%. I've not done any photography outside the Peak District. Well, very, very small amounts for the last 5 years, at least, purely because of that fact.
Wow.
Because it is just so beautiful, and there's so, time is an essence. And it is, because it is, we are spoilt with all this glorious landscape on our doorstep relatively. You want to make the most of that as well.
Oh,
sun's out now.
That's
gorgeous.
Sun's lovely. We're just basking like lizards now.
Oh, that's nice. I mean, Kinder as well, I've only really scratched the surface of exploring this wonderful landscape. It's it can be seem quite a bleak, foreboding place, but that's the beauty of it. I think going back to sort of the threads that the Peak District had for me throughout my life, it's one of those places where at school, friends would say, we went up Kinder, and you were like, oh, did you? That's you know, it was this.
Brave.
It was that. Yeah, it was like this magical place where nobody goes, and if you conquered it, you were like, wow, you know, that sounds amazing. And I think my first trip up here was with college. And once we'd done it, it was like this vast place. This was a mate that we'd explored. It was fantastic.
Do you remember where you went?
We came up this just up this side from Edale.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So we didn't go too far, to be fair, because of the tales that people tell you of Kinder. It seems so scary. So yeah. It's tentative steps each time, and that's the thing about. I mean, even the Peak District, the smaller areas that I've explored, when you first explore them, they seem vast. And the more you come back and explore, everything sort of shrinks a little bit and becomes much more, you know, familiar and recognisable. And I think over periods of time, Kinder does that as well. Mm-hmm. But it still holds that magic. I think every time I speak to my mum and say, I went up Kinder, or I've been up Kinder. She tells me the tale of when she was a kid. And she trekked up here with a rucksack, you know, a 15-kilogram rucksack. So it holds a memory for everybody, and that's the beauty of this particular landscape, because it is. You feel like you've really achieved something when you come to the plateau.
Yeah.
So it means a lot to everybody to have that little story to tell. More so than anywhere else, I think, in the Peak District.
Do you have any particularly memorable experiences, whether that's been really bad weather or when you've seen something really special, you've captured something that you'd never thought of doing before?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's mornings where, because if you come up in the dark, as we spoke about earlier, with that anticipation and that excitement, and when you sit waiting for the sun to break the crest of, you know, the Great Ridge, and it all kicks off, and it's there's that elation that you feel, and it's almost it's a happy sadness. It stirs quite an emotion in you. There are definitely a few memories like that, and then being completely clagged in by low cloud and not seeing your hand in front of your face, and then all of a sudden that parting, and it starts to reveal the shapes of the landscape below you.
You remember where you are, like, oh yeah,
exactly.
I'm
yeah
here.
You've come from sort of complete white out to all of a sudden little glimpses of the valley below, and that's spectacular in itself. And then yeah, with walking with Ralph, we've been in the valley below and it's been a day like this, glorious sun. And then you get to the top and it's blizzards. And we've had to turn around because all you can see is his head poking out a snowdrift. So I think this is time to go back down.
Oh, wow, yeah. You have been up here in some proper conditions.
I know, and poor old Ralph has had to suffer. but yeah, I mean, he loves it as much as me. I mean, he's not a dog that does well in sort of built-up environments. So when he's out in the open, he's in his element like me. You know, he's just super happy, tails up, exploring with his nose. He loves it.
Do you feel like he really adds to the day for you?
Yeah. I talk about him a lot. But yeah, he does 100%. It's to have him with me. Although I do enjoy being alone, it's nice to have that companionship. Definitely. I think we've walked so many miles together, I'd feel lost without him. Yeah.
Wow.
I think anybody that has a dog feels the same way. It's that, yeah, you have a special bond, don't you?
Yeah, it's quite a remarkable thing, really. It's hard to explain, I think.
It is. To anybody that has an animal or a dog, they are a friend, family. Yeah, it means as much in that respect, I think.
And sometimes just I think the way they look at you, you know, when you know if you just sat having a cup of tea and they just look at you and they're probably just thinking about their next treat or
exactly. Are we going yet?
Yeah, but it's, I don't know, there's something about them just sort of holding that space.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, I was going to say there's no words, but that's not true with me because I do talk to dogs a lot.
I'm just the same. We hold conversations and I think he gets quite bored sometimes, but he has no choice but to listen.
So I wonder, because I think maybe it might be helpful for people. I mean, I know you said that it's still a challenging environment for you to photograph, but if you were to give a couple of tips to people, if they were wanting to come up here with a camera or even just a phone, what would you suggest that might take people, rather than just kind of holding up the camera and taking a shot and grabbing that, what would you maybe advise people to do in order to really capture the day?
Wow, tricky question.
What might you do differently if you were to think you're a beginner photographer?
I think ultimately, when I first started, you try to get the entire view into one frame, and then you just end up looking at nothing because it's so busy. So, and that seems counterintuitive, because you want to try and express the beauty of it and capture everything in
the
one
vastness
frame. And you think, if I don't do that, I'm not doing the scene justice. But you can actually show more by capturing less. So focusing in on the things that make this landscape unique. So that is the gritstone edge. So look for shapes and patterns that repeat throughout the landscape, and just include the distant landscape in the background, to give it that connection. So yeah, it's sort of, and very much just take time to observe things, just slow down a little bit, and pause and just soak in the environment before taking a picture. And certainly it helps with repeat visits, and just keep coming back and understanding the landscape that you're exploring.
And would you say that early morning is generally the best time to capture the nice light?
I would say, like, generally, yes. Today, we're sort of mid-morning now, so, well, not quite, but but you can see how glorious the light is at this hour. So
it's incredible, and it's moving, it's changing so quickly. The clouds are moving pretty fast because it's so windy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just gorgeous the way that they're just moving slowly across the landscape, creating these little pockets of light and shade. So there are certainly times I can see, I can almost see a picture now as the light's just caught sort of the heather in the foreground, and then it's leading to one hill and then the next, and it's all because it's different tone and shape, it's creating wonderful contrast through the scene. But there is nothing like sunrise. Is a special moment, because I've never been able to put my finger on why, but it seems like sometimes you feel like you're the only person awake at that particular moment, so that makes it really special.
Yeah, so it's actually the feeling of it,
yes,
as well as the light conditions.
Exactly, yeah. So that is even more so than sunset. It's just a wonderful moment to experience, and that does become a little bit addictive to see that more and more. But what goes along with that is, yes, is that low light, that warm light, and there's nothing more invigorating than seeing that happen and trying to capture that. So sunrise light, or the golden hour light, certainly brings an image to life. I think in this particular area for sunrise, it is really special. The wool packs at sunset do look quite spectacular.
Absolutely.
That area of the land really, really uses sunset light nicely.
Yeah, whereas for sunrise you're in a bit of a dip there, so you have to wait quite a bit longer.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And again, there are certain summertime, particularly around this area, is a difficult time to photograph as well, because the sun's not quite in the right spot. So wintertime is a good place to explore this side of Kinder. From Hayfield is always a good sunrise sunrise shot. The difficulty is the time it takes to get there,
so
it is an early start,
and travelling from Sheffield as
so there are those elements to consider, but it's always worth the effort. 100%.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I live right here in Edale, and even I struggle with that. I do get out, but it does takes some motivation, and I'm looking out the window and trying to assess, obviously, like it's a great it's a great morning anyway, no matter what happens. But yeah, in terms of my energy levels, I try to sort of manage that and choose.
Yeah.
And looking out the window, it's like, oh, I don't know. And sometimes, it changes. And whatever you decide, you've got to live with it.
it's funny that is, because it does, sometimes you'll just go out regardless. And sometimes, you are tired. And I've been there so many times where I get up, glance out of the window. Is it? I'll go back down, lie down for 10 more minutes, and then another look, and then you're in this indecision, this indecisive moment. It's awful. So sometimes you've just got to say no, I'm going, or yeah. No, I'm not.
And do you have any tips for doing that to sort of get yourself out the door? Do you pack your bag the night before, or do you have some fancy breakfast or a flask of coffee that you bring?
Like, no, to... I'm never that prepared. No, I'm usually just the bag's always ready, so mm-hmm. it's just get up and out. Yeah,
brilliant.
unless I'm in that tired mode and I get a little bit indecisive, which these days I've just sort of I decide not to go and just accept that I might miss. Miss out.
And do you
always
tend,
next time.
Do you tend to carry a tripod?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you will use that.
Definitely. Occasionally we'll go handheld within the woodland if I want to be a bit more reactive, but certainly if I'm in a wider landscape, I always use a tripod. Yeah, definitely.
And do you feel when you're up here or in the Dark Peak in general, do you feel like it gives you a bit of a break away from everyday life, and do you feel like it sort of helps and supports you in any way?
Yeah, definitely. I think once you leave the confines of the urban environment, as you slowly driving into more and more countryside, it's like a little pressure valve being released, isn't it? You slowly sort of everything sort of eases away, and then you get to your location, you put your boots on, and as soon as you hit the trail, then all those thoughts and worries are gone. Yeah, definitely. And that's, for me, that is what landscape photography and being out in the landscape is. Is that escapism? Is that a retreat from life and that solitude?
Yeah, I do miss having, because I do just use my phone now, mostly because I spend more time running these days than walking. But I do miss taking out a big camera and having that sort of dedicated time and finding that patience with myself as well to just sit and observe and then move and then see how things change and to choose the shots. And
I think patience is the most important thing. Yeah, definitely. It's hard, and it's something that I still struggle to learn. There's been so many times where I've thought nothing will happen here, and then as I'm driving home, in my rear view mirror, it's all happening. You just think, why didn't I give it 10 more minutes?
Yeah.
So, these days, just be patient and see. Because there's all the unexpected can happen more often than you think.
So, you've probably been waiting for this question.
Yep.
You ready?
Not sure.
Poised? What makes you wild about Kinder Scout?
Well, it is all the things we spoke about, really. It's that sense that this is conquers not the right word. It feels like a place when you come to, you've achieved something. So, especially if you're walking in the dark, and as we've spoke about, the anticipation of that, and then when you've made the effort to get to the plateau. That sense of like achievement, although it's not a huge high place, it is one of the most dramatic places of the Peak District. And then the pleasant walk that is on the plateau gives you that lovely sense of reward. So yeah, for me, and it's all about that, and the fact that you can have so many different weather conditions in one go. It's always unexpected, and it always gives you something to cherish, something to enjoy, and something to really remember the time that you've spent up here. So yeah, I think that's, for me, that sums up Kinder, I think.